You are Locked On Fantasy, your daily fantasy football podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Fantasy Football Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Vinny Iyer. When I'm not doing this, I'm writing about NFL and fantasy football for SportingNews.com. Now, come to the site now. We have all the fallout from week number 11 in the NFL, the Thursday and Sunday games. We have the big Monday night game we'll talk about tomorrow, the Rams and Chiefs. Big game there with a lot of fantasy points and takeaways for sure. We had plenty of takeaways. Six teams were off, so we had a good 12-game slate going into the Rams-Chiefs where plenty happened, and that's what we do here to kick off another week as we transition to week 12. And as a programming note, reminder that this is Thanksgiving week. You probably knew that. Three games on Thursday. We're going to have an abbreviated week, so we'll have a Tom Kesnick later for our high stakes takeaways a little bit later in the show, looking at some games here and what happened there with intrigue regarding individual players. We'll go to our weekly waiver wire tomorrow with Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly, like we already do. And as well, we'll tap into Pro Football Focus expertise with Jeff Ratcliffe there on Matchup Focus, looking at all the games on the week 12 schedule. We'll also do a little bit of a DFS spin on those guys as well as I dig deep and maybe look for some value plays, fill out a lineup here on FanDuel because we won't have Tyler Lochner. Being Thanksgiving Day on Thursday, we'll take a break and have an abbreviated week, but we'll still get you good to go for all your fantasy football needs. The progressive that we go transition from one week to the next, and this is a critical week with the playoffs just around the corner in fantasy football. So let's dive right into some of the takeaways. And we have to start with the Thursday night game and throw it back there. It's the Packers and the Seahawks, and it was 27-24, kind of the way we expected this game to go. A lot of running from both teams. The Seahawks definitely more successful. Chris Carson was able to play through the hip injury. Looked pretty good. 17 carries, 83 yards, had a TD. Rashad Penny also looked good, got a little banged up, played a little ahead of Mike Davis here, but Mike Davis came through if you played him in a PPR because he had 66 yards from scrimmage and two catches there, so not bad. All three backs had some value. Penny got banged up a little bit. Carson took over, so if you were waiting for Carson to return, take advantage of the matchup with the Packers, he did come through there. Russell Wilson, same kind of thing, lower volume. They actually had 31 attempts. He actually left a lot on the table. So more attempts than usual, but he did have the TD, missed one to Doug Baldwin, did connect with Baldwin later, 7 of 10 targets for Baldwin, 52 yards, and a touchdown. Tyler Lockett, busy as well, 5 catches, 71 yards, caught all of his targets, and David Moore had a good game as well, 4 for 57 on 8 targets. So these receivers came through in PPR formats. Baldwin did a little bit more with the score, but overall, when you look at it, it was the product of the matchup. The Green Bay secondary, those defensive backs, young guys, are still hurting here. So it's not going to happen like that all the time. It's still mostly a run-heavy game. You'll take the 225 and 2 from Wilson, especially when he adds 17 rushing yards. So good to see that, but Wilson's ceiling is a little bit limited if they can run the ball this effectively. On the other side of things, you had Aaron Rodgers with 332 and 2, and Devontae Adams went off here, 166 receiving yards, caught 10 of 12 targets. It was Robert Tonyan with the shot play touchdown, one catch for 54 yards, the third tight end. And he might get a little bit more playing time because Jimmy Graham, one catch, 13 yards, also hurt his thumb here, so he's out. So we have Mercedes Lewis in blocking situations, Lance Kendricks in receiving situations, maybe Tanyan's the shot guy. So it's just a mess of tight end, maybe a situation you want to avoid altogether. In fantasy, a tough position to trust in Green Bay. Adams, and then we expected more from Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Equanimeous St. Brown with no Randall Cobb, no Geronimo Allison. But it's pretty much the Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones show. Jones scored a nice touchdown as well through the air, 5 for 63. Caught 5 of his 6 targets, no Ty Montgomery there. He's clearly taken over the receiving role as well. And 11 for 40 not as great on the ground. The Seahawks were sold out to stop him, but he still found the end zone and got 40 yards there. So great game for Jones, great game for Adams, a solid game for Rodgers. And that's what's probably going to be like this for Green Bay going forward with no Cobb, no Allison, no Graham. It's going to be a lot of Adams and Jones going forward. And that's kind of good for fantasy if you want to focus in on those two guys and have them produce triplets, and fewer guys sometimes are nice to have. And that's what you see there in Green Bay going forward. As we flip to the 1 p.m. games, we'll talk about a few of them here with Tom Kesnick in a bit, as well as one of our marquee late games there. But the Bucs lose to the Giants 35-38. If you stream the Giants defense, you were pleased in one sense because they had four picks, including a pick six, but lost some value there when the Bucs started scoring. And as usual, we had a quarterback change. Once the first guy throws interceptions, we had Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing three picks in this game against the Giants. You have James Winston coming in relief, throws two touchdowns, has an interception. They lost a fumble that really could have turned into a touchdown. Mike Evans recovered it for a bonus touchdown on top of a 6 for 120 on 7 targets. O.J. Howard was good, but we'll have to see. He has an ankle injury that game, 5 for 78 on 6 targets. So we figured it could be more of the Evans-Howard show. Adam Humphries did get in the end zone as well, a touchdown when his favorite quarterback came back in the game, Jameis Winston. So, but at this point, Chris Godwin and DeSean Jackson and Cameron Brate, they got a fade. Humphries, Howard, we'll see about the injury, and that could boost Brate here. But those are the main guys. Peyton Barber, another solid spot against a bad run defense. They get another one, by the way. San Francisco has been better against the run. They contained Barkley last week, but looking at Barber, 18 for 106 in TD. So clearly he's the lead back there, even with Ronald Jones maybe getting closer to return with that hamstring. Jaquizz Rodgers is not a guy you can trust. That receiving volume there the previous week was kind of fluky. On the Giants side of things, Saquon Barkley, they wanted him to run angry, run dirty. That's what they got out of Barkley in this one. 27 carries, 142 yards, and 2 TDs. That kind of ruined the good matchup for Eli Manning. He still came through with 231 and 2, including one to Barkley through the air, 2 for 10 and a touchdown he added to his rushing total. Odell Beckham Jr. comes through again with that 41-yard catch early, has a touchdown as well, catches all four of his targets for 74. So the volume was down 17 of 18 for Manning. He wanted a little bit more volume, and the game flow really didn't help Sterling Shepard or Evan Ingram. Evan Ingram did have a 54-yard catch to kind of salvage his day late, but this is what the Giants want to do. They want to run a lot of Barkley at this time of year and just have Beckham be that wide receiver guy that they trust the most and really get the ball out of Eli Manning's hands as much as possible. Makes a lot of sense. Not great for maybe the value of Shepard in these type of games, but Barkley and Beckham, that's great. And Eli as well was definitely streamable with those numbers with no turnovers in this game. Had his best rating of the season. So the results in reality came through with a second straight win for the Giants. Eli, two straight good games. They have the Eagles secondary coming up this week, so not a bad spot again for Eli. But Barkley and Beckham seem like the bread and butter here of this offense overall. And Winston, as we came on to record, we realized that Jameis Winston has now been named the starter here for that 49ers game. So definitely some streaming appeal. Again, you can't really trust these guys because they could throw interceptions and get picked. But looks like Jameis Winston is going to get one more shot, his third shot of keeping this job. And I think this time he will come through for that for sure. The next game we'll talk about is the Falcons and Cowboys. This was disappointing from a fantasy football perspective. 22-19, you know that score right away. But Matt Ryan throws for 291, but has an interception, throws it to Leighton Vander Esch. And as a TD, Julio Jones keeps scoring now all of a sudden. 6 for 118 and a touchdown, but that's really hurt Mohamed Sanu and Calvin Ridley and Austin Hooper in the past game. If he only has eyes for Jones and he's scoring, that's also hurting Matt Ryan's value as well. So Jones coming through, you're happy if you've got him because he's adding the touchdowns. There's big volume here, but the other things have not necessarily come through for the Falcons of late. Tevin Coleman was solid here, not spectacular. I mean, it's crazy that he had 11 touches and 85 yards, and they didn't really try to give him the ball more in what was a close game overall. They forced an Ito Smith a lot, I don't get. 8 for 22 in terms of touches and yardage. So maybe Tevin Coleman just needs more and more work, and I don't know why they peel back from him at all. But you had to be pleased if you had Julio, disappointed if you had Matt Ryan. You were disappointed if you streamed Dak Prescott as well. He did have a rushing TD to make his day kind of acceptable, near 15 points, but you thought there was going to be a few more points this game. What didn't help is the Falcons didn't get a lead here, create more game flow in the passing game, and Ezekiel Elliott ran all over the Falcons with 122 yards rushing. So that made it very easy, and Elliott was the leading receiver as well, 7 for 79, so really kind of kept Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup in check here. Really didn't get to do much in this particular game because of that. So I look at the Cowboys and facing the Redskins here on the short week. Pretty good matchup. I think that's a good chance to have the passing game get back on track, as the Redskins are good at least containing the run to at least open up the offense a little bit. But Prescott showed you he can still do it with his legs if you're stuck there. And I like Prescott at home on Thanksgiving. I think he's just in a good spot. It's been a traditionally good spot for Cowboys quarterbacks, whether it's been Tony Romo or John Kitna, and you have to look in that direction for sure this week. The next game we'll talk about here is the Jaguars and Steelers, and this one was surprisingly low scoring, at least from the Steelers' perspective. I get it, they played a tough defense. Ben Roethlisberger came through in the end because he had a rushing TD that was the game winner late. He also had two in the air. So that erased the three interceptions. He also had 314 yards there. So Roethlisberger looked disastrous early with those picks, but he avoided some things, led the comeback, led all three touchdowns here, and it was the difference in the world for the Steelers. Antonio Brown, solid game. Jalen Ramsey, A.J. Bowie, who cares? 5 for 117 in a TD on 13 targets. And the inefficiency was there, but it doesn't matter. You'll take that any day from Brown. 8 and 104 on 10 targets for Juju Smith-Schuster. So these receivers definitely won that battle in the end. That's what allowed the Steelers to win the game. And James Washington had one play, but Vance McDonald scores for the second consecutive week, 3 for 27 and a touchdown there. So he had the big game in the playoffs against Jacksonville, comes through here for his owners this week. On the other side, Blake Bortles, playing caretaker extraordinaire, got 6 sacks 6 times, despite only dropping and throwing 18 times on top of the 6 sacks. So that's a lot of sacks per dropback. And they tried to avoid it by going Leonard Fournette heavy, but the Steelers just kind of dared them to keep running. And Fournette gets another 30 touches after 29 last week. He goes well over 140 yards here, 141, and you get the TD as well. So Fournette, the volume, it's all about Fournette now, maybe to the detriment of this entire offense where they're going to play keep away. But if you're a Fournette owner, you're fine, but you got to fade everything else. The wide receivers, tight ends, Bortles, TJ Yeldon, Carlos Hyde, all that's insignificant here for the most part, as they're just spelling Fournette at this point. So Fournette, you're thrilled. The Jaguars defense came through if you played them. Here had the 3 picks, got 2 sacks. Roethlisberger only gave him 20 points. So Jaguars defense playing the Bills next week. So that is definitely in a nice smash spot that you can look at if you need to use that team next week. And the next game here at 1 o'clock, the last one we'll talk about before we bring in Tom Kesnick to look at some of the things that happened there. It was the Colts and Titans, and the Colts were all over the Titans, 38-10. We were kind of like T.Y. Hilton going in this one, and he came through 9 catches, caught all of his targets, 155 yards, 2 TDs. They could not cover him deep and short. He did a little dance on the sideline to score his second TD. Dontrell Inman, they threw a lot to him in this game. 6 times, he catches 4 for 34 in a TD. So it's that wide receiver 2 by committee, and it's really messy there. Tight end, Eric Ebron wasn't even targeted in the pass game. No Mo Alley Cox. It was Jack Doyle catching all 4 of his targets for 43. But what sometimes hurts is the diversification of this offense. You had 9 people catch passes. You had 4 people run, including Jacoby Brissett, who came in to mop up time to kneel there. So Eric Ebron did have a shot at that passing touchdown after he had a rushing touchdown last week. But Andrew Luck fell, couldn't quite corral it in. Andrew Luck comes through with 23-29, 297-3. What a stud. Just solid at home in these type of matchups. And never has lost to the Titans, and that continued here in this particular week. And 38-10, it was all them. The other side, Anthony Firkser was your leading receiver. Tajay Sharp had a touchdown. It was just ugly with no Taywan Taylor in this game. Corey Davis was easy to shut down with the secondary, 2 for 30 on 4 targets. So not much there. And Deion Lewis, even with his game flow in their favor, did not work out. 11 touches for 32. It was Derrick Henry with some garbage carries late in the game when it was too out of hand, where they didn't even want to risk Lewis here, especially with Marcus Mariota hurting. So Mariota elbow stinger, that's what they're calling it. He fell on the same elbow. It wasn't looking good before then. And Blaine Gabbert wasn't looking that great after. So that really drops down the whole Tennessee offense. We know that. When there's no Delanie Walker, there's no Marcus Mariota, everything else really gets ugly here. And that's what happened here. And with the Colts, I think Andrew Luck locked in every week. The 3 TD upside is just incredible. With the Titans, you got to fade everything. And Marlon Mack also got in the end zone for the Colts. So he's going to be busy and be the goal line back there. Jordan Wilkins also scored. So Jordan Wilkins is kind of a little bit ahead of Nyheim Hines a little bit in the usage, but still a bit frustrating with that, to spread it all around. But Luck, Mack, Hilton, Ebron Doyle, all these guys are usable in the right spots. And I think Ebron will bounce back, because I think you look at this Titans team, they had the personnel and the will to kind of take Ebron out of the game, and they kind of did that in this particular week. So Tom Kestnick of High Six Fantasy will join us here, but I got to tell you, ever since I started doing this podcast, everyone asked me, who do I like to win this week? Team X, Team Y. Well, I got to tell you, before you make your game picks or player props and fantasy football and all that, you got to find the right place to go to, and that's my bookie. And I would only recommend to you a place that's been good to me and everyone. And if you make your way to my bookie, if you win, they're going to pay you well. And they have live in-game betting. Again, the over-unders on fantasy points scored is fun to go after. And then they also have some of the most rewarding player perks in the business. And my bookie has a special offer for you now. The site is slamming new bettors there during the day, and they want to give everyone a fair chance to get in and get the best service possible. So if you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time, you'll get an additional $25 free play on deposits over 100. And remember, when you join now and enter that promo code, not only enter the promo code Locked On to get that $25 in free play on deposits over 100, you'll get matched dollar for dollar up to 1,000. So that's pretty sweet. So use the promo code Locked On 25 to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use that promo code Locked On 25. You can claim up to $1,000 in free play, as well as that $25 bonus there if you deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time. So very easy to do. Download that app, go to the site. It's got to take advantage of that deal now. It's a good time, and get into the mix here with the holidays coming up, and you have a real shot to win some nice money there. But the only way you can do it is play at MyBookie. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. When we get back here, we'll talk to Tom Kestnick of High Stake Fantasy for some look at the four most intriguing results of week number 11. Joining me now, as he always does here on Mondays for some high stakes takeaways, is Tom Kestnick of High Stakes Fantasy and the NFFC. How's it going, Tom?
It's going good. It was an interesting weekend of football so far. And, of course, we've got the big game tonight that I think everybody is looking forward to. And hopefully it lives up to all the billing and expectations, because this could be one of the best games we've seen in maybe a number of years. So hopefully it goes just the way we all hope it will.
Yeah, and unfortunately a lot of things on Sunday didn't go exactly the way we thought they would a little bit. Certainly the Panthers didn't, when they lost to the Lions in Detroit. Went for the two-point conversion and the win, didn't quite get it there. But what I saw with the Panthers is maybe this is a chance where the torch is maybe finally passing, and they just had to realize Devin Funchess is not that great anymore, and they got to play DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel a lot more going forward, I think.
Yeah, that was what a brutal game for Devin Funchess. I mean, he just seemed like he dropped everything that was thrown to him. He dropped an easy touchdown pass just an absolutely brutal game. And you're right. I mean, DJ Moore has certainly been a talented guy, but it's been hard to predict when he would do well. Certainly there was nothing going into this game that would have led you to start him with any confidence in a fantasy league because he hadn't really done much in a while. But he went off yesterday. It was a great matchup for him. The Lions have issues in the secondary and certainly covering out of the slot. And he played very, very well. And, yes, I think it's time to make him the number one focus in the passing game, or at least 1B, if you will, after Greg Olsen.
Yeah, on the road, this team has not been very good either. They're 1-4. The only one was that comeback win against the Eagles in the fourth quarter. But one thing I've really noticed with the Panthers on the road is their run defense just completely disappears. I can't explain it. They've got a lot of talent in the front seven. But Kerryon Johnson, before we got here, we'll talk about that in a moment, had a big game here. And now the Seahawks come in. Is this a run defense you can trust to exploit in fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of problems right now, I think. You know, two games in a row that they've lost, and they really, I mean, I know they had the chance to win it yesterday, but they really didn't play well for more. They are a good running football team, and that's, we know that's their focus. We know that's what they want to do. So I definitely think that you look at this matchup and maybe Carolina going forward as a team that, for the running game, you feel better about your players if you're starting them against this defense. And certainly, again, Chris Carson, I think, is looking pretty good.
Yeah, and on the other side, unfortunately, Kerryon Johnson did have this knee injury. Looks like he avoided major injury. It's considered a week-to-week. That probably doesn't bode well for the short run turnaround Thursday against the Bears defense in a tough matchup anyway. But overall, how do you think this passing game and the running game is going to be distributed among these backs? It looks like it's probably going to be a little bit more of Zach Zenner and a little bit more of Theo Riddick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, who knows? I mean, I think they'll give LeGarrette Blount a shot at it. You know, we'll see about that. But, yeah, I think it's a bad matchup anyway for the Lions going into this game against Chicago in a short week. I think they're going to have to throw it a lot. So I think of their – whatever you look at in their backfield, you would say Theo Riddick is the guy that I would want to play because he should at least be very active in the passing game. I don't think the Lions are going to run the ball well no matter who they put back there.
Now, one guy that we have to look at, sure, for the Lions was Kenny Golladay. He'd been quiet of late. Then all of a sudden Marvin Jones is out with a knee injury. We think James Bradbury might be tough for him, but it doesn't matter. He was making tough catches. They were trusting him. His talent really showed. And I think maybe if Jones misses more time, I think this guy is going to be heavy targeted and come through for us.
Yeah, I think there's certainly he's a very talented guy. And again, you know, you look at this game coming up, you would say that they're probably not going to be able to run it very well, so they're going to have to throw it. Now the Bears are going to certainly focus on him, but he's very talented. I like the talent a lot. I think eventually he was going to be their number one receiver. But yeah, Marvin Jones being hurt and almost certainly not playing again this week would certainly expedite that. So if you got Kenny Golladay, I think you're feeling pretty good about him right now.
Now, a game that was unusual that we don't see usually in the NFL like this is the Ravens and Bengals. The Ravens decided just to go run, run, run. There was a couple twists to it. One was Lamar Jackson in the Super Bowl era. No quarterback had as many carries as he did. He had 100 yards here. Very productive game as a rookie runner. I think second only to Robert Griffin III in the rookie season, his teammate there. So that was kind of interesting. But they ran it right down the Bengals' throats here. They didn't have their linebackers healthy. This run defense has been bad. Then you had Gus Edwards show up and show up Alex Collins. After Alex Collins river danced to have that first touchdown, it was pretty ugly. And looking forward, though, if Joe Flacco has to miss time, you look at the next couple games here against the Raiders and Falcons, this looks like it could be a thing for a game plan, at least in the short term.
Yeah, you know, I just don't know what to make of Lamar Jackson, because if you're a mobile quarterbacks, we like them in fantasy. Certainly, we like them. There's a long history of this. But we also like them when they can throw the football. And he didn't throw the football. I was not impressed with him as a passer. Now, it was his first start, okay. I'll cut him some slack. But the matchup was certainly very, very good. Cincinnati's defense is bad. So it should have lent itself, I think, to a better game than we saw from him. He has talent at wide receiver to throw to. So, and you're right, the matchup this week and next week on paper, they're fantastic. I just want to see him throw the football because he's not going to run for 100 yards every game. They're not going to run him 27 times. That's an insane amount for a quarterback. I mean, Cam Newton was averaging about 9 a game, and he's much bigger and stronger. So the rushing attempt's going to come down and probably way down. So he's got to throw the football well if he's going to be a viable fantasy start. It just can't be all the running. 150 yards passing in today's NFL, that's horrible. I mean, it's awful. You would bench any other quarterback who threw for a yardage like that 9 times out of 10. So I'm concerned about this. I like the match this week for sure, but I think you got to look at this situation and go, there's tremendous risk here if he doesn't get one touchdown pass. If he gets one with the rushing, you're fine, but he's got to get at least gotta show me something.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it made a lot of the Ravens unplayable because not only did the receivers not be involved with that low yardage total, but then they made a quick change at running back that no one saw coming here with Gus Edwards. And is it just becoming harder to trust this Ravens offense with Marty Morningweg and John Harbaugh from week to week?
Yeah, I mean, where did this come from? I mean, this guy was not getting any touches. There was no reports coming out of practice that, oh, my God, the coaching staff really wants to turn it over to Gus Edwards. That just came out of nowhere. So it's one of those things where you're doing the right thing in fantasy. If you started Alex Collins yesterday, the matchup was great. The Ravens ran all over him. Everything was there just like we all thought it was going to be. It just turned out to be somebody else besides Alex Collins. So there's certainly problems here if you're an Alex Collins owner. Gus Edwards looked good enough that you would think he's going to get touches going forward. They traded for Ty Montgomery, so you would think they'd want to get him involved at some point. So, yeah, it's becoming a mess, and I don't think anybody saw that coming, but that's kind of where we are.
Now, we'll talk about only one thing about the Bengals because it's pretty ho-hum and the same thing that you expect from the Bengals every week. But John Ross, I see him with his speed as a shot play guy, but he seems to be a weirdly touchdown-dependent type of receiver, and I haven't seen really much else that I like where I'm going to trust him at any point if you're just gambling for a touchdown at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Gets back to, you know, the Lamar Jackson thing. If he's not going to be able to throw the football, you can't start him. You can't start Crabtree. I guess Willie Snead looks immune, but, you know, he's a low-ceiling guy to begin with. So it's very difficult right now. Yeah, I think you're kind of looking at John Brown. If you're a John Brown owner, you want Joe Flacco in there. You really do. I said this last week. You want, if it's not going to be Flacco, you want it to be Griffin. Because one thing RG3 can do is he can throw the deep ball. He's got a big arm. If it's going to be Lamar Jackson, I think you're backing way off John Brown, even though these matchups are ridiculously wonderful on paper.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's kind of a weird thing. We have to wait and see every week on who the quarterbacks are going to be for the Ravens to kind of go 180 on who we're deciding to play. The next game we'll talk about in the same area around the Beltway, the Redskins and the Texans. We know what happened to Alex Smith, but in a weird way, Alex Smith going down, Colt McCoy throws immediately to Jordan Reed, gets him his best game. I think he had the best game of any fantasy tight end. Bad week for tight ends in week 11, but I feel like that chemistry with Alex Smith wasn't there, but I feel like maybe Colt McCoy being around for longer with Jordan Reed, that could actually be something going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's something to watch. I'm not a big Colt McCoy guy, but certainly, you know, he knows the system. They're going to have to throw it most weeks because every team's going to load up to stop Adrian Peterson. They know that's what Washington wants to do. They want to be a ball control team, so I think that it'll be interesting to see if he can revive Jordan Reed. We all kind of thought it would happen with Alex Smith because he's a big fan throwing to the tight ends, but it didn't happen. So maybe it can happen with Colt McCoy. I guess I can't say I'm overly optimistic about this. I think it could get I think it could get ugly on Thanksgiving, actually, in Dallas. I'm not overly optimistic about Washington's chances. I think the Cowboys are playing pretty well. So I think it could end up being a game that the Cowboys win pretty easily.
Now, Adrian Peterson, every time we want to kind of swat him away, look at these matchups, here we go, we look up 2 touchdowns again. Is he a hard guy to sit just because of the volume and always the guy that they look to get in the end zone?
Yeah, I mean, he's their focal point, right? In their best case scenario, they run the ball 20, 25 times, and Peterson is their guy, and he's the foundation. And they were in a situation yesterday where they were able to get some touchdowns and get some things for him. But I think it's a week-by-week proposition, and especially now. And again, Alex Smith was not playing well. He was very, very bad. But it's not going to get any better with Colt McCoy. I don't think Colt McCoy is an upgrade over Alex Smith. So I think it's a week-to-week proposition with Adrian Peterson. You look at the matchup, and if they are playing a team that's really bad against the run, you certainly start them with some confidence. If it's a team like Dallas, for example, that is pretty good against the run, you know, you start them if you have to, but the matchup isn't looking great.
Now, on the other side of things with Houston, this is pretty much is a simplified offense at this time, but I think at this point, when you look at Kiki Kuti in there, they were waiting for him to get healthy from that hamstring, but he goes off here and does some good things while Demaryius Thomas posts a zero. And is this kind of where it's going, where QT is really the number two guy? Because he's a big threat a little bit that the defenses have to pay attention to, that he can open things up for DeAndre Hopkins. But bottom line, he seems just more talented and more explosive at this point than Demaryius Thomas.
Well, he's certainly, yeah, he's a little more athletic. I was shocked that they didn't, you know, get anything to Demaryius yesterday. And I don't know if that's a trend we can bank on. I think Kiki Kuti offers them something. You know, you got Hopkins line, on the one side, and he's going to do his thing every week. They do need a number two. Is it going to be Kuti? I don't know. I think Kuti is probably better because teams got to they worry about Hopkins, but you also got to worry about Demaryius Thomas. So I think that will really help him from a fantasy perspective. Would I start Kuti over Demaryius Thomas every week? Not at this point. I need to see more than one game before I'm ready to say, yeah, he's clearly the guy I would want there other than DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, and it's a limited passing game, we know, but Deshaun Watson can still grind and get it done. It was the greatest game for him on Sunday, but maybe having a little bit more trust in the younger guys will help. Now, we move to the other game, the game of Sunday that didn't go the way we planned, at least from one side of things, but the Saints all over the Eagles. This one, they won pretty much easily wire. Josh Adams had the random touchdown for the Eagles. But with the Saints, I don't think Traquan Smith is fluky in this one. I get the matchup was really good, and they got Keith Kirkwood and Austin Carr and multiple tight ends involved. But I think this matchup was great for Smith, but the trust everywhere on the field has to be a good sign going forward, especially in these home games where these Saints seem to pass a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's another one. Who saw this coming, right? I mean, he didn't get a single target last week, and he really hadn't been a big part of the offense in over a month, and all of a sudden he just blows up. So, okay, so we look at this now and we go, well, what do you think about Traquan Smith? He's talented, we know that. Drew Brees is playing fantastic, we know that. We know they're going to score points. So are you buying into it? I mean, you look at the matchup this week against Atlanta, a team that does not have a defense, and you've got to be feeling, okay, I'll take a shot here. But you got to understand there's risk because Drew Brees will spread the ball around. And this was, based on the reports we got after the game, a lot of this came from the Eagles really focused on Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. And that sounds obvious. You know, every team's going to try to do that. But they really wanted to make sure those guys didn't hit him for any big plays. And so that opened things up for Traquan Smith, Austin Carr, Kirkwood, all these other guys. So I think you look at Traquan Smith and you're like, okay, I think there's some potential here. But again, you got to understand the risk involved because he literally put up a zero in week 10. So we know what the floor is and it's bad. We know what the ceiling is, and it's great. But if you can take on the risk, if you can assume the risk, okay, it could pay off for you. But you got to understand there's downside here.
Yeah,
the only guys in this offense that we feel good about consistently are the core four: Brees, Kamara, Ingram, and Michael Thomas.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think you have to kind of circle it. You have to look at the matchup. Maybe getting a good matchup with Robert Alford this week, and the fast track of the Superdome. I think that lines up a little bit more with Smith's talents. And I think we've seen this before with guys like Devery Henderson and Robert Meacham. They're boomer bust guys, but in the right spot, they can be really nice for you in fantasy. Now, their side, nothing was good in fantasy. I guess if you were happy if you started Josh Adams because you thought hey, this is a pretty good run defense. We're going to throw. But he comes through as an RB2 here. But to me, the Eagles, what I'm focusing it on, and I think this has really hurt them, is Zach Ertz got a lot of the attention. This was a team pretty good against the tight end. But Alshon Jeffrey and Golden Tate, throwing Nelson Agholor in this mix, they just don't look right and really kind of dragging this offense down in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, that was a real buzzkill. I thought this was the game, other than the one tonight, this was the game I was really looking forward to. I thought the Eagles would put up a fight here and we'd have four quarters of football, and it really didn't turn out that way at all. They took Zach Ertz away, and like you said, none of the receivers stepped up. Jeffrey, Agholor, Tate, nothing. You know, Josh Adams scores against a good run defense, so why would you have started him? He did that on benches everywhere, I'm sure. You know, even with all the teams on a bye, you'd have been hard-pressed to go for Josh Adams this week. So, yeah, they're a mess right now. They really miss Frank Reich. I mean, you look at what's going on in Indianapolis, you look at what's going on in Philadelphia, and you go, well, Frank Reich might have been a little more important to that Eagles team than we thought a year ago.
Yeah, that's for sure. And do you think at all, though, I mean, these matchups are a little bit better going forward for this Eagles team. They seem like their team with Carson Wentz, we've seen the consistency, that they'll probably turn around and bounce back right here against the Giants.
I think, you know, I wouldn't bet against it. Carson Wentz is he's a very good quarterback. And I think he's going to play well more often than not. And I agree with you, the matchup coming up against Giants is a favorable one. And they're also getting to a point where, you know, the whole backs against the wall thing, you kind of got to look at that and say, well, they got to start playing some football. Otherwise, they're going to be sitting at home in January, and they don't want to do that as the defending champs. So I do feel like I'm not giving up on this team. I think there's still too much talent here, especially starting with Wentz. I think they will bounce back, but I think maybe we just got to look at this and go, that Saints team's really, really good.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. It's as much about the Saints than it is really, I think, the Eagles and where they're going. I think the Saints made a statement with all what they were doing offensively and defensively, and that's what they were trying to do, trying to become the new Super Bowl favorite. So good stuff there, Tom, and getting close to the Super Bowl in fantasy football, but there's still a big contest our listeners can get into, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Every week we offer what we call the FanBall 50-50 contest. It's on fanball.com, and it's $50 to play DFS, and 50 teams compete, and the grand prize is a free entry in our main event next year in the NFFC. So just go to fanball.com/50-50. The contest will go live this week on Tuesday. We sell this thing out usually by Saturday, so make sure you sign up early, get in on it, play some DFS, and if you win it, you can play in season long in the NFFC next year and win even more money.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And don't forget, it is a holiday weekend, but we still have a lot of fantasy and you can still win a lot of money. So you want to get in on that for sure. So, Tom, good luck in your games this week. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Vinny. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Thanks again to Tom Kesnick for joining us here. And off we go into Thanksgiving week. And while you're getting this chance to spend time with your family and enjoy a good meal, keep in mind that Locked On Network is here for you all the time. The Locked On Network family is expanded. We've got our great NFL shows, our beat report, team by team. You got NBA, you got MLB, you got college sports. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're all over social media there, and some good shows all around, some great work being done throughout the network, and we're just happy to be a part of it, and we're happy that you're listening in for sure. So make sure you're checking out, subscribing, all the shows that have interest to you, because there are a lot of good content that you're going to find nowhere else here, except on the Locked On Network. We'll be right back to break down the last few games here of Thursday and Sunday in Week 11 in the NFL. Now, just a few more games to get to that we haven't talked about, either with myself or with Tom there. And let's go to what we had in the late window with the Chargers and Broncos. And with this one, you look at this and pretty much Phillip Rivers did what a lot we thought. We didn't expect 401 yards passing, but he got it with 401 and two TDs. One went to Keenan Allen, 9 for 89 on 12 targets. Antonio Gates, 5 for 80 on 7 targets and a TD as well. So good game there for Rivers. Solid. You could do without the picks. Melvin Gordon, a bit disappointing, did not get in the end zone, but still, the usage still way up there. 26 touches, 69 rushing, 87 receiving. Austin Eckler got a little bit more run in this game because they had to throw a lot more, so that changed the game a little bit. 8 touches for 69. So very interesting that the Chargers had to pivot, but it was the way the game plan went a little bit that the Broncos sold out to stop the run and played really well defense. They lose this game 23-22. The Broncos come back and win. Case Keenum, we knew it was going to be an ugly game, but Phillip Lindsay comes through again. 11 rushes for 79 yards and 2 TDs. Royce Freeman returned to the lineup. He gets a TD goal line work as usual, so not much change with that backfield after the bye. Cortland Sutton looked really darn good. 3 catches for 78, 4 for 56 for Sanders, but so much for this committee. It's still a lot about Lindsay. It's still going to be Cortland Sutton and Sanders in the passing game. And not much else. I think Jeff Heuerman was a bit of a stretch there in the previous game. The matchup didn't call for it here. And they could run the ball in this one and win it. So that's what we have. But no changes to that backfield there. No real changes for the Chargers backfield. One thing I'll say about the Chargers passing game, Mike Williams, Tyrell Williams, I didn't recommend either of them. More and more people getting involved, especially with Gates and Virgil Green at tight end and Hunter Henry potentially getting back and Keenan Allen balling and Melvin Gordon and Eckler being used. It's really hard to trust the Williamses there in that particular passing game. Sometimes you want it to be simplified, easy guys getting involved, and that's what we saw. Our next game that we'll talk about, we got two more to go. The Cardinals lose to the Raiders at home. Last second field goal there by former Cardinal there. So when you look at it, Daniel Carlson comes through, former Viking, I should say. When you look at it, Derek Carr, 2 touchdowns, only 192 passing yards, but still way exceeded expectations. Got the touchdown to Jared Cook, which we were looking for, 3 for 31. Brandon LaFell had the other one, but then he ruptured his Achilles. He's done for the season. Marcel Aitman had to see a bigger role with Jordy Nelson and Martavis Bryant out. He was 4 for 50. Seth Roberts, 4 for 38. On 7 targets. So Aitman and Roberts could be the biggest part of this receiving core going forward, as well as Jared Cook. But I think this all helps Jalen Richard. Doug Martin was a little banged up after a good second half there. So when you look at it overall, I think with that epic music blaring, it was disappointing for Martin because he was 10 for 52, but didn't touch the ball in the second half at all. He looked a little banged up. Something was a little off, but it's hard to deny Richard when he looked like the best of the backs, 11 for 61 on the ground, 3 for 37 there as well. So it's a good spot. Maybe look at Richard going forward. They finally went pivoted to him. Finally, John Gruden, overdue move there, especially because of his versatility now in relation to the wide receiver injuries. Now, on the other side of the thing, Cardinals, big game from David Johnson as expected, 137 yards rushing. Unfortunately, he didn't get in the end zone with the 154 yards from scrimmage. Christian Kirk, however, looked very good. Made a nice 59-yard play to get him. 3 for 77 at TD. Larry Fitzgerald, only 2 catches, but he made them count for 2 TDs. So you can't beat that at all. And very low-volume passing game. 3 TDs for Josh Rosen on only 9 completions. So weird game there because they ran 31 as expected. But if you started Rosen or Carr in a DFS and you just threw up some money out there, you were kind of pleased with the results here, given their value and results. So Rosen could still have some better days, but I think it's more of a product of the matchup. The Chargers matchup next week is a lot harder. I still like David Johnson going forward, but I'm not going to be as thrilled about the Arizona passing game in that particular matchup. Now, the final game we didn't talk about was Sunday Night Football. The Bears hold on to beat the Vikings 25-20. When you look at that, we expected Mitchell Trubisky and Kirk Cousins to struggle. Actually, Cousins ends up with 2 TDs here, 30 of 46, 267 yards. Was sacked a lot, threw a pick six, but 2 TDs, 2 picks there, and ran a little bit to defer the picks, but still better than expected there. Mitchell Trubisky was below expectations here. He helped himself with 43 yards rushing, but 2 picks, 1 TD, only 165 yards. So Trubisky is hard to trust in these tougher matchups, that's for sure. Going forward, Detroit is an easy matchup here on the short week. So Trubisky, I'm only playing in the matchups that I really like. Anthony Miller gets in the end zone again, but As we expected, Taylor Gabriel, Allen Robinson, Terry Cohen all didn't really do much. Jordan Howard went against the Vikings defense. So they should all have a rebound spot against the Lions there. The Bears defense has been a beast all year. Gets a defensive touchdown. It's all over the place. And the good schedule going forward, they got teams like the Giants and 49ers and Lions. And a lot of good matchups to exploit by the Bears. And they're going to be a beast unit here down the stretch to win a lot of championships for people. On the other side, Vikings, Anthony Allen came in this game banged up with a back issue and a little bit of ankle. So he's cooled off a little bit. More of what we thought we'd see, more of Adam Thielen, 7 for 66 on 12 targets, while Diggs really went nuts here. 18 targets, caught 13 for 126 in a TD. So basically these guys are the extension of their pass game when they or running game when they average less than 10 yards a carry, and that's or 10 yards a catch. And when Dalvin Cook in this running game really got shut down against the Bears. So Diggs and Thielen are only two guys you can consistently trust in this offense going forward. The Vikings defense did play pretty well in getting some turnovers and a fumble there as well as one sack. So not too bad if you started the Vikings defense, but the Bears defense is really where the power is in the NFC North, and they definitely came through here to win a title. So there you have it. There's a breakdown of all your Thursday and Sunday games of Week 11, what we saw, takeaway from the box scores, what you can apply going forward to fantasy football in this crucial Week 12 and beyond as we hit the stretch run. For Tom Kesnick of High Stakes Fantasy, this has been Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News and Locked On Fantasy Football for the Locked On Network. We'll see you tomorrow for some waiver wire advice, weekly waiver wire with Eric at home.